Happy Tuesday on the Ira Kaufman podcast as we march toward opening day. Ira, we are live at Hooters, one of your favorite places, and we'll just leave it at that. Of course, your podcast is presented by Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. The summer sales challenge is almost over at Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. They're challenging all other dealers to give you the lowest clearance prices of the summer. Right now, lease a 2017 ATS sedan, just $299. XT5 crossovers, $329. It's the final clearance. Visit EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. That's EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. Offers expire at the end of the month, but definitely call the dealership. Check the website, EdMorrisCadillacBrandon.com. A lot of times they do get extended into Labor Day. These are tremendous opportunities. And at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, the Summer Sales Challenge continues. It's almost over. General Manager Brian Danahy has final clearance on overstocked vehicles. They're challenging also all other dealers to give you huge made-to-move clearance savings. Your satisfaction is our passion at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa. Don't miss these savings. Ed Morris Summer Sales Challenge ends soon at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, just west of 275 on Fletcher. Of course, click EdMorrisCadillacTampa.com. Ira, you know, summer offers, summer clearance, all the great stuff at Ed Morris, it's coming to an end. You got your gear on, you're wearing your Ed Morris gear.
You know, Lee, we're going to flip the calendar soon, very shortly. But the sales continue at Ed Morris Cadillac Tampa, Ed Morris Cadillac Brandon. There's no end to it, Stephen. Go in, they'll work with you, they'll make you a fabulous deal. The cars are beyond reproach. And the financing is much to your liking. So just because the month's over doesn't mean the sales are over.
Can I clarify something, Ira, quickly? You say the calendar's about ready to flip?
Yes.
I trust it's a Hooters calendar?
There's no question. In fact, there's a couple here tonight that I believe are on the calendar. And I heartily endorse such a move.
I thought you were going to say you were going to ask them to flip, like do a couple of cartwheels or something like that. All right, well, that's good. Now, we got to let everybody know, very special podcast today, and I believe, Ira, you would agree that it's very special because it involves less of me and less of Lee. And so you like that.
Different voices for our listeners.
An all-star lineup.
It's all good. Yeah, it's an all-star lineup.
Some very good stuff. I listened to the taping of your Sage sit-down with Justin Pawlowski and Todd Wright, who always brings us some great perspective on the Bucks.
They are mini Sages. If I'm a Sage, they're mini Sages over there.
Exactly. Your Sage threesome. But that's coming up here in just a few minutes, so stick with it. A lot of great stuff. I've already listened to it. A lot of fun. A lot of good stuff.
We cover a lot of ground, Steve. A lot of ground.
It is hard to entertain me, and that was entertaining. So stick around here. Now, but first, millions of people are tuning into this podcast because they want to know what you thought your Sage takes out of the preseason game, the alleged dress rehearsal, missing 15 players on Saturday night against the Browns. The floor is yours, Ira. What happened?
DeKemper, do we really want to revisit one of the drabbest preseason games I've ever seen? And that's saying a mouthful, guys. We're 30 years of Buck football.
50.
That was a terrible football game. I don't know how they broadcast it. I don't know how Rondé stayed awake. But I'll tell you what, between the stoppages, the penalties, the rain, the sloppy play, and most importantly, a disinterested Buck team, I thought. And it comes from the top. And I'm not blaming Dirk Cutter. I wouldn't have played those guys either. But you're sending a powerful message to your team, Lee, that this game means nothing. Let's get the heck out of here. And certainly it applies to Thursday night's encounter with Bruce Allen's Redskins, Lee. Let's get out of here and get ready for the Dolphins. That's what it's all about, and that's what it looked like Saturday night.
I never thought of it that. It's a very interesting take. I never thought of that. And that, you know, would snowball a little bit, like you said. Yeah, Cutter had no interest in it. He was laughing about it after the game.
Now, if you're the guy fighting for the 52nd spot, Lee, you're motivated.
Sure.
I understand that.
But you know, as Cutter was cracking up and they're asking about the offense, go, well, if this is September 10th, I'd be worried, you know.
What's the first thing Cutter said after the game? Hey, guys, if we make this quick, I can go home and watch the McGregor fight. I mean, that's classic Cutter. So he didn't want to talk much about the game. He said it was blah.
Before we get going here on that game, I'll just get it out of the way. I know a lot of Bucks fans are, I don't know, paranoid's the right word, but they're like, oh, my gosh, there's no pass rush. Specifically about the red zone stats and about the offense.
And the third down conversion.
Yeah, first off, it's a preseason game. I don't put a whole lot of stock in preseason games. But number two, when you're down four starters and two of those starters are arguably the top six or seven, in their respective position, wide receiver, meeting DeSean Jackson, meeting Mike Evans, of course your offense is going to struggle. So yeah. I can't wring my hands much about the lack of offense because they're down four starters.
Steve, if you're into special teams, you had a bonanza. Folk looked good. Anger looked fantastic. Anger's tremendous, by the way. Whoa, what a pickup by Light. Nobody talks about it. That guy's a real weapon.
Of course nobody talks about it. He's the freaking
punter.
Come
on. I understand that, but he's going to help you win a couple of games this year by dropping him inside the – forget the 20. This guy does it inside the 10. You're going to agree with me on something?
I'm going to got to needle you a little bit because Anger was so good last year. He's not going to win more games this year because the odds of him being that good again are almost slim to none.
But they got a better team. They got a better team.
So means they should punt less.
Now, guys – what I'm looking for, and I don't care about Thursday night's game, but they don't run the ball well, Steve. They don't run the ball. What has happened to the ground game from a fabulous 2015 performance? I mean, awesome performance that was a big part of this franchise record-breaking attack when Dirk Koetter was the offensive coordinator. Doug was running wild. Sims had a heck of a year behind him. The O-line looked good. Guys, I'm still waiting for the ground game. I'm still waiting, Lee.
We all are.
I'm running out of time here.
Now, you dropped the word bonanza. I can't help
it. I did. And I don't want you saying horse cart ride either.
No.
All right.
Something much better than horse cart riding. And we're right now talking to our 20 listeners who know what the hell we're talking about.
I don't even know who that is.
Well, that was the number one show. Bonanza was
the number one
show. Well,
when you say bonanza, I automatically think of that famous Three Stooges skit. Yes, we have no bonanza.
Yes, we have no bonanza. Steve, the ground game. Can I have one? Can I have a little something?
Well, you know, you're contradicting yourself, Ira. Contradicting yourself. They're down two offensive linemen. It's the wet, soaked field. And Jaquizz Rodgers had 10 carries, 34 yards. He got, you know, knocked a couple of short
runs. Since when are you knocked over with a 3.4 average?
After the year of Doug Martin, 3.4, that's a 20% increase. But in all seriousness, he ran hard. They haven't fumbled. I mean, they moved the chains. They moved the chains in each game. So I'm not really that worried about it. It's not fair to say nothing matters than worry about the run game. But I'll say this, Ira, regarding your sage wisdom, you wrote a nice column telling everybody to just calm the freak down. And you've been covering the NFL since 1959, right? 59?
Oh.
Number one priority, stay healthy, Lee. And everything behind that is a big step below.
Mm-hmm.
Stay healthy. Cutter's got to be happy. Lee's got to be doing Carl.
Only really one major injury, and that's to a backup defensive lineman.
It's a backup.
And on that final note here, before we get to your special guests on your podcast, Ira, on the Cutter disinterest, it's interesting because they had some not very good practices where the team, he didn't like the effort and didn't like what he saw. And then they go out and, you know, Cutter's not really playing everybody, and it's sort of, you know, what you were just explaining. And then he cancels practice today because there's bad weather in the area. He didn't even reschedule to practice in the morning. He just canceled it, which that's pretty rare. I mean, a lot of these coaches treasure that practice time.
Opening day is almost upon us, Steve. You're right.
Did that surprise you? He canceled practice?
He's going to go hard next week, Lee. He's got to go hard. They get an extra day, maybe Monday. An extra day normally. There's no practice. They are going to go very hard next week, Lee, to get ready for the Dolphins. Cutter's been thinking about this game since April. There's no doubt about it. He's been devising plays since April.
I'm sure.
And we've seen very, very little, you know, invention in terms of...
Of course.
Well, the DeSean Jackson and bend around, that was intriguing. Steve wrote a story about that.
Well, it's probably to show the Dolphins something they better cover. I'm expecting a very good effort at Hard Rock Stadium. I think it'd be a big disappointment if they come out sloppy. Cutter wants to see crisp. My question to him the other night, did you see crisp? No, Ira, I did not.
Blah.
You know, right to the point.
Beautiful. All right, Ira, we're going to get to your special guests. Everybody sit back, enjoy. It's Ira Kaufman with the commish and Todd Wright, who, of course, hosts the Todd Wright Fantasy Football Podcast every Monday and Friday here on JoeBucksFan.com. And if you haven't listened to Justin Pulaski, a.k.a. the commish, he does talk a lot of football when he's not on his podcast. So the stuff here is really, really good.
All right, we are here with a special edition of the Ira Kaufman Podcast. Live at Hooters on Hillsboro. I'm Justin Pulaski. I'm the commish. But this isn't my podcast. This is Ira's podcast. So let's bring him in, the man himself, Ira Kaufman. Hello,
Commish,
Ira.
What a night. You know, Todd Wright did a fantastic job.
He
with
did.
This
and he's here
draft.
As well. Hello, Todd.
Hello, guys.
Put down your 8-iron for a second over there, Todd. He did a fantastic job.
One of my
this
favorite clubs.
This draft went much quicker than Todd even imagined because everybody was ready.
Yeah.
And Todd, did anybody embarrass themselves other than
no.
me?
No, and it wasn't an overly biased draft towards the Buccaneers. I was worried with the presence of stick carriers. You know, in my world now, my golf world, the stick carriers are the caddies. I'm starting to understand what they mean in the JoeBucksFan.com world. So I learned a little something tonight. Winston went too early. Doug Martin went too early. Mike Evans went one pick too early. Jaquizz Rodgers went way too late, which I was stunned by in tonight's particular fantasy draft. But, for those who say it can't be done, I do it all the time. We had a 13-round, 14-team fantasy draft in 75 minutes with a 10-minute break in between. It can be done. You don't have to blow out an entire afternoon, an entire night.
It was very impressive. I've done drafts. I did a draft one year that took 6 hours. 6 hours with listeners of a radio station because we drank a lot that day. But I will say that, and he mentioned Jaquizz Rodgers going late, and so that leads us right into Bucs talk because, Todd, you're of the opinion that Doug Martin will not be part of this team, which means if he's not, Jaquizz Rodgers is the guy then, right?
I think we saw enough last year in that, 2 to 3 game stretch where Rodgers received a significant amount of work to see what he can do. Now, is he a bell cow back? No. Can he do this for more than 3 games? Probably. But I think at this point, based on the organization's feeling on Rodgers, what we saw out of him last year, and where Doug Martin is at, that this is Rodgers' job to lose. And I think productivity and good health through the first 3 games keeps him in the mix or keeps him in that position outright week 4 and beyond.
Commish, Jaquizz Rodgers has waited a long time for this opportunity.
He has. Yeah.
He's
always
stuck in Atlanta.
And he was always a third down back.
And he's behind Doug Martin last year.
Yeah.
So this is his chance. Now, I think Todd's also suggesting, I think with some validity, that in the final cuts, there's going to be some tasty running backs that might become available. Yes.
Around the league. Yeah.
So that's another factor.
Well, and here's the other factor is, Ira, you would trade Doug Martin and 2 first-round picks for LeSean McCoy, right? Is that what I'm hearing? You go all in on LeSean McCoy.
You know, I made a mistake, Todd. I'm reading the comments.
Ira working for the Vikings when Jimmy was moving Herschel Walker? Is that how that happened?
Gentlemen, who was my first-round pick? Shady McCoy.
It was. Yeah.
But you drafted
him at the right position.
Yes. He's been very consistent, Justin. He's very consistent. I had other people on the comments after my column saying, you know, the difference between Doug Martin and LeSean McCoy is infinitesimal. I don't know how
what
you could say that. I don't know how you could say it. Doug Martin's been a non-factor.
I don't even know how to pronounce that word.
Justin, 3 out of 5 years, Doug Martin's been a non-factor.
Right.
3 out of 5. So McCoy's solid every season. I would give up that second-round pick. Isbitz, our boy Isbitz, did a poll. 57% of the fans said they do it. But when I look at the comments, 9 out of 10 are killing me, saying, Kaufman, you don't know what you're talking about. Now, Pawlowski, you're going to weigh in.
I just think a second-round pick and Doug Martin for a 29-year-old running back is just a little too rich. Now, would I entertain some sort of offer? Absolutely. Because I look at LeSean McCoy and say, what are the Bills doing? And if they're looking to get a second-round pick for a 29-year-old running back,
maybe
I just think
I think
it's very far-fetched. Now, if we're talking third or fourth-round pick, that's much more in my ballpark. I don't believe in giving up those top 60 picks
because that's
where you're going to get those impact players.
They just got a second-rounder for Reggie Ragland. No one's going to say Ragland was a better player than McCoy on the Bills. The Bills already moved Sammy Watkins.
But to Justin's point, LeSean McCoy doesn't really fit on the Buffalo Bills the way they're going right now.
No.
It's a bad fit.
No, he's a very good player.
He could be a difference maker.
On a bad team.
Okay.
So virtually anywhere he goes, it improves his situation from a fantasy standpoint. He played very well in Buffalo last year. Generally in fantasy, you don't want a running back on a bad team. That's off the table with McCoy. It was last year. It is again this year.
They got a good line in Buffalo.
We need to factor in, though, that he is 29 years old. It would be a second-round pick, and there's something about running backs that hit the age of 30, a guy who has dealt with injuries. He's not the biggest back, and he's got a lot of tread on those tires, right? He's got a lot of wear and tear on those tires. You're making fair points, Justin.
I understand that. All right, let's look at the other side of this. Let's say the Doug Martin thing just doesn't play out well for anybody. Jacquizz Rodgers simply can't stay healthy. Then where do you go? Yikes. I think Charles Sims has shown, no, he's a third down
back.
He's a niche back. If you're without a running game, and at the end of the year you're sitting there and you finish 7-9, 8-8, 9-7, and you're like, if we had a running game, we might have been a playoff team. We might have been a division winner. Then you look back and say, why didn't we do this? Even if McCoy just gives you that 1 or 2 years. As I think, I would look at McCoy and say, yeah, I'm looking beyond just this year.
I would say one more year.
You're at that position now. You're coming off a 9-win season. Are you pushing forward? Or how often, guys, have we seen teams around the NFL get to 8, 9, 10 wins and then the next year take a big step back? And it hurts the momentum of the franchise, the fan base, everyone. Someone usually gets fired because of it. If you can shore up that position, and Buffalo, despite their denials, saying he's not available, I believe he is available just as I believe Jarvis Landry in Miami is available.
Somebody's going to trade for him. Somebody is going to trade for him.
I think if it's not Tampa Bay, I think it's Andy Reid in Kansas City.
I think Todd's making some great points, and that was my main point in the column. This is not 2013 for the Bucs anymore. I understand the hoarding of the draft picks, the second-round pick. If things go well, it's a late second round. That's a 55th pick, number one. And, Justin, when you win 9 games and you pick up LeSean McCoy, you are now a dangerous football team.
There was probably no bigger proponent of drafting a running back somewhere in this draft early than I was. And I thought second round was a prime opportunity. And so I look back to this past draft, and I look at a guy in Justin Evans. He better work out, because you're talking about a later second round pick to where you could have gotten a Kareem Hunt or some of these other running backs, young running backs, rookie running backs, that are being very impressive in preseason, and instead they went with a safety.
Marlon Mack in the middle round.
Even a Marlon Mack, to where they took Jeremy McNichols, where they could have packaged that fifth-round pick and something else to move up into the fourth round and get a Marlon Mack who has been impressive for the Colts so far. So, yeah, I mean, I wish they would have gotten a running back, but I don't know if I'm ready to mortgage a second-round pick, because, again, this team's ready to win now, but they're also ready with all of the key players at key positions, whether it be quarterback, running back, defensive end with Noah Spencer, they have high aspirations for, cornerback and Vernon Hargraves. You talk about prime positions in the NFL. The Bucs have all of those prime positions loaded up with young players. So they're primed to win now, but they're also primed to win for the future
as well. This is a good, tasty argument.
It really is.
What is the difference? If I take giving up the draft pick off the board, which we're not doing, because the Bills aren't going to cut McCoy, let me take it off the board. What's the difference between the Bucs bringing in McCoy and spending that money for 2 years and what they did with DeSean Jackson? What's the difference?
There's no difference. I wouldn't mind that. I think that the hefty price tag of a second-round pick, even if it's a late second-round pick, I think you can get impact players.
It gives me pause.
Now, if they did it and that McCoy was the guy, I'd be like, I understand. So it's not a hard no for me. But it's a cautious, is that the right move for the future of this team, or are we panicking just for this season?
Would you wait for the first 3 weeks to take place, Todd, and see what's going on with Jacquizz Rodgers?
You're risking another team jumping in.
That's right.
You're risking
that's
Andy Reid jumping in if Kareem Hunt doesn't work out. And that's just one thought for me. There are other teams out there who I think would have interest in LeSean McCoy. But I think the first few weeks is going to tell us a lot, not only as it relates to the Buccaneer running game, but It'll tell us more about where this team is at. Were they ready to start the season? It'll tell us a lot about the play overall of the defense. And because there are expectations when you win nine games and going into that next season. And a lot of teams traditionally aren't ready to take that next step. We all know who the Super Bowl contenders are. And it's tough to break through and be one of those. But I keep bringing up Andy Reid with Shady McCoy because Kansas City is a great example. They are a step ahead of the Buccaneers. And I know they're different conferences, different divisions. But my point is Kansas City is a playoff
team.
They're
a playoff team.
But they can't break through the divisional barrier and get to a conference championship game, which makes you a Super Bowl contender. The Bucs would like to be Kansas City. That's the next step. Always be in the playoffs.
A perennial
playoff team where you're trying to now be that Super Bowl contender.
Commissioner, I was wondering, the Bucs. I did a little original research, my man, and I'm going to throw this at both of you guys. We think that the Bucs always get off to lousy starts. The last five, and you know how coaches like to break the season down.
Well, they didn't in 79, 5-0.
I
79 was good.
I put this in a column, and Isbitz almost fell off his chair reading it. But in the first quarter of the season, in the last 5 years, the Bucs, Justin, are 4-16. They're 4-16.
Jeez.
Sabotage. An act of now, they overcame it and won nine games last year. But, Todd, can you keep digging a hole like that?
No, I've said to anyone who's listened in recent years, and clearly the organization is in a better position than this other one, over the same amount of time, roughly a decade, the Bucs' record is the Jaguar record. There isn't that much difference. The Jaguars more recently have won a playoff game than the Buccaneers have. Now, on this date, and based on last year, the Buccaneers, sure, because not only did the Bucs win nine last year, the Bucs have a franchise quarterback. The Jaguars clearly, again, do not. I've been cleaning up my condo. I found this signed card from Byron Leftwich. I'm like, yeah, that wasn't the guy either.
No, and I'll say this about this season. Those first four games are even more crucial, not just for where the excitement level is for the fan base, but for when you look at the rest of the schedule and what they have, when you're talking about the Dolphins, the Bears, the Vikings, the first three games, and then you talk about games, of course, against the division, but you got the Packers, you got the Patriots. I mean, this
you got to beat up on those first three quarterbacks.
You really do. And I think it's 2-1. They have to go 2-1 in those first three games before they come home for the Giants. They have to. And maybe go 3-0 before the Giants game because of how difficult this schedule is. They have to get out to a hot start. If they don't, not only is it going to be tough on them, but the fan base is going to start to panic because of all of the hype and all of the excitement leading into this season.
I'm not a big schedule guy because as
things change, I know
they do change. But years ago, they changed the schedule so you play everyone every 8 years in the other conference or 4 years at home and a road. So the first place schedule, it's only two first place teams, and the fourth place schedule is only two fourth place teams. And yeah, things change. The only things I look for on a schedule is if my favorite team, yeah, I want to see them play in the Browns, the Bills, the Jaguars.
The Jets.
Yeah. Maybe the Chargers, as long as you've got an offense. You don't want to see them playing the Packers, the Patriots, the Seahawks. The bad teams stay bad, the good teams stay good. And
Steelers.
There's about 20 to 24 teams right in the middle. Yeah, I'd put the Steelers there as one of those Super Bowl contending teams. You don't want to see them on your schedule, home or road. So everything in the middle, you guys took a look at those first three quarterbacks. It's presumably Jay Cutler, Glennon, Trubisky, maybe the ghost of Vince Evans by then.
And Bradford.
Yeah. Not the best, but it's not the worst either. It's not Bortles, McCown, and Peterman, J.P. Peterman, in Buffalo or whoever they'll have quarterbacking by then.
Now, Commish, I'll give you the flip side. it also means Jay Ajayi, Jordan Howard, and Dalvin Cook.
Got to stop the
Bucks
run.
The Bucs better have their run defense stout.
Or put up points early.
And take them out.
And say to those, so we've got Adam Gase, we've got John Fox,
and then we've got Zimmer. Yeah.
Say, so put, give yourself a 10 to 14 point cushion and then say, all right, you going to run the ball now?
But the Bucs don't do that a lot, quite often.
And that leads me back, with these teams wanting to run the football, that leads me back to our conversation about the Bucs running game. And when Jameis Winston's at his best, they're running the football, and he's got that play-action pass going.
Yeah.
So we go right back to the Bucs running back situation, where if they can't run the ball and they're just relying on these receivers and these tight ends, are they going to be able to move the ball methodically down the field? Or if they can't get that run game going, are we going to see the Buccaneers' offense struggle even with all these weapons as part of it?
We can't forget that in the first month last season, Jameis Winston was throwing 45 balls a game, and they were 1-3, and that was a big reason why.
Right.
They had no running game. And and the year before, Justin, they had a franchise record offense because Doug Martin was going crazy, and Charles Sims had one hell of a year, a year that nobody even remembers. He got 1,000 yards from scrimmage behind a Pro Bowl running back. That's very difficult. So I'm not totally down on Charles Sims like Lee DeKemper is on this podcast, Todd.
And I'm down on him from a fantasy standpoint.
Look,
I'm down on him also as a number one guy.
I agree.
You don't want him as a number one guy.
But he wasn't a number one guy in 2015, but he was very effective. That's all I'm saying. He was effective in his role.
Rondé was talking about this the other night on the telecast, which I still can't figure out. Was it an infomercial for Channel 8's Morning News, or was it an infomercial for the West Stadium Club?
And Leslie Lacy.
And somewhere in there was a Bucks-Browns game that and a first half that was, what, 3-3? Something like that? Something like that, where we're trying to watch little of this, little of this, and we got all of this other stuff. But Rondé talked about what the play-action pass means to Jameis Winston and to Dirk Koetter and this offense. And one of the things I'm really big on is also what's your identity in terms of how the opponent every week is going to prepare for you. And until further notice, the Dolphins are going to be prepared for Jameis Winston, Mike Evans, and DeSean Jackson. They are not preparing. We have to stop Jacquizz Rodgers.
Right.
They are not. So if Rodgers and the running game doesn't do anything, it makes Jameis and Evans and Jackson's job that much more difficult.
These opposing defenses aren't going to bring eight down into the box to stop the run game.
You?
No, absolutely
There's
not.
There's very few offenses
guys
in the NFL
the
they do it against.
Maybe Dallas. Maybe. Yeah. Justin, are you ready to give your Bucks pick for 2017? Are you prepared? Preseason's over. It's over.
We've discussed this before we came on the podcast, but it has to be 10 wins or bust, right?
I agree with that.
That's a high bar, though.
It is a high bar, but I think that's
the bar they've set
for themselves.
Is that what you guys are more in touch with the Buccaneer fans than I am? Is that what the fans actually expect?
I think so.
Do they expect
a 10-win
season?
11 or 12.
Yeah,
to me is realistic.
If the Buccaneers don't make the playoffs, there's going to be a lot of disappointed fans in this area.
If they don't make the playoffs, then what? Then what? As we look ahead to 2018, who takes the fall? Or do you just reboot this and write it off as a one-year aberration? I see too many teams that get to 9 wins, and then the next year they regress, and you almost forget they even got to 9 wins.
I think Jameis would take a hit. Justin?
Yeah, well, and I will say this organization and the ownership have had such knee-jerk reactions that, you know, if they go 8-8 or 9-7 and don't make the playoffs, you can't sit there and say, well, we're going to not re-sign Jason Lye, we're going to fire Dirk Koetter, we're going to start over from scratch, because that's why this team has been, or this organization has been miserable for 10 years. Now, if they go 4-12, if they go 3-13, then I'm guessing – there's some factor that came into play, and most likely it's Jameis Winston went down with an injury and they had to rely on Ryan Fitzpatrick for more a majority of the season. So I don't know how that's all going to play out, but I will say this. If they're healthy, they've got their players in play. If they don't make the playoffs, the stick carriers are going to be very, very disappointed, Todd.
Yeah?
Very disappointed.
Not the caddies.
Not the caddies.
No, the stick carriers.
Know, the rowdy bunch at the bus
stands. Todd, do you think this enthusiasm will translate into fannies in the seats at Ray J if the Bucks get off to a 2-1 start? There's always a little bit of a lag.
Well, here's the thing about that is you have to factor in there's a lot of fans who will go see the Giants who have already bought those tickets.
The Patriots.
And then the Patriots. And the same with Bears fans. They hate everything about their team right now, but they'll be there. They'll be there to watch and almost badmouth them. And then be asking, are the Cubs still up 3.5
yeah.
games in the NL Central?
Yeah, they're masochists. They'll
they
show
are.
Up.
Yeah.
Will that change? Will that home field advantage that Cutter wants so badly, Justin, he's tired of looking at New Orleans jerseys and Atlanta jerseys.
I'm skeptical. Even looking at it from a Lightning standpoint, as the Lightning have gotten really, really, really good, the Blackhawk jerseys are still there. The Red Wing jerseys are still there. The Bruins jerseys are still
the
there.
Rangers.
The Rangers jerseys are still there. Vinick has done about everything he possibly can to get rid of them. They're still there. Here's the difference. The Lightning sell all the other available seats and fill up the arena. And those are the fans that, for whatever reason, aren't coming to Raymond James Stadium.
Was it like that during the glory years with Sapp, Lynch, and Brooks?
And I think the key is what Todd just said is you have to be able to drown out those opposing fans. They're always going to be there. And honestly, if you go to any opposing stadium, most of them, look at Bucks fans are starting to travel to Atlanta, to San Diego last year, to Arizona. So, you're going to get opposing fans no matter where you go. The key is if you can sell out those other seats and drown them out, then you're not going to have it. And I've said this from the beginning. To think that you're going to go from a 9-7 team to just having this dominant home field advantage is naive. It's not going to happen overnight. Now, it's happened a lot quicker than I thought it would, just this rabid fan base coming together. But I've looked at this season as a growing season where if they continue to win, if they do go 10-6 or 11-5, if they make the playoffs – now you're going to start to see more and more Bucks fans come out. More and more Bucks fans want to get those season tickets. And they're going to understand the excitement of a young football team, of a growing fan base, and making these Bucks games an event. But again, it's not going to happen overnight. It's probably not going to happen for that Bears game. It might not happen this entire season. It's going to be a slow growth. But it does. It's as much as what we're doing and what I'm trying to do on my podcast and growing this fan base, as much as what the Buccaneers are going to do on the field. Because if they go out there and lose, it's hard to get excited about a team that's losing. Now, you're going to have your hardcore fans that are going to do it, but it's the fringe fans are going to fade right away, as they always do.
For you, there's a lot to like about this team. People like Cutter as a coach. Lights brought in good talent. But is it naive or too simplistic to say, Todd, that to a large degree, the enthusiasm, the excitement, almost all the roads lead to Jameis Winston?
Of course it does.
Naive to say?
No, because I think that's the case virtually everywhere in the National Football League. When we talk about these annual Super Bowl contenders recently, and we rattled off the list, they all have big-time quarterbacks. Sure, Big Ben goes down for a game or two here or there. I have no idea why Landry Jones is still in Pittsburgh. They drafted the kid out of Tennessee. I don't know that that's a better option, but I've never gotten the Landry Jones thing.
Tampa's guy is 23 years old. That's the enthusiasm, the energy. He's still emerging. He's still developing.
Of course. So, yes, it is ultimately linked to that. I think there's a lot to like about a team like the Tennessee Titans to me. Not that the Bucks fans care, but Mariota came into the league at the same time. They are more of a Cutter loves to run the ball. Malarkey lusts to run
and
the ball.
And they got the O-line to do it.
And they drafted the a lot of weapons, too.
They went out and got DeMarco Murray. They drafted
Corey Davis.
Yeah.
Another wide receiver.
Yeah, they've got guys that can establish
that. They're trying to take
that
next step. And they got the second quarterback in that draft in Mariota. It annually is why it amuses me how teams overvalue quarterbacks because they're so desperate to get one. Golf analogy. I compare it to when Phil Mickelson looks at a 9-foot birdie putt and his old caddy, and they look at it and look at it and look at it because they're convinced it's not straight. There's something in this putt. And the more they look at it, the more they convince themselves it's not a straight putt. There are a lot of general managers out there the last 7-8 years in the NFL who look at these quarterbacks and they look for something that isn't there and decide, well, we've got to get a quarterback, so let's take him. And most of those first-round quarterbacks don't work out. It looks like Jameis and Mariota, which was the big debate a few years ago, are going to work out. They have justified a lot of that argument to this point. But this year's draft, you know, I remind everybody about Dak Prescott, and this is coming from a Cowboys fan. Jerry wanted Paxton Lynch. John Elway traded up to get Paxton Lynch. Jerry regrettably said, all right, just take Dak instead. Sometimes things work out that way.
Do you have, Justin, do you have any legitimate, serious qualms about Jameis Winston going forward? Any?
I do not. You know, I've always tried to take a perspective of, and I know people want immediate satisfaction, but I think when you're talking about a guy who is 23, he's the third youngest quarterback in the NFL, third youngest starting quarterback in the NFL. What he's done in his first 2 years has been outstanding considering what he's had around him. He's had a running back in Doug Martin who was great his rookie season and then fell apart last year. He's had Mike Evans. Other than Mike Evans, he's had nothing to throw to. He had no weapons last year. And that's why this kind of slogan of weapons for Winston grew this offseason. And they go out and get DeSean Jackson. They go out and get O.J. Howard because they knew they had Jameis Winston was entering his third year, which is a big year for a quarterback, and they needed to surround him with some weapons. What's frustrating to me is they surrounded him with those weapons but didn't give him a running game because he is strongest with the running game and that play-action pass. I don't know if they're relying on Doug Martin, and if they're not relying on Doug Martin, as Todd, you think, and I know Steve Isbitz thinks as well from Joe Bucks fan, is if they're not relying on Doug Martin and Jacquizz Rodgers gets injured, you've got Charles Sims, you got Peyton Barber. We know they don't like Jeremy McNichols. Now you're in absolute panic mode, and you might as well be throwing the ball every day.
We don't even know if McNichols is going to make this team.
And, by the way, you said it. 45 times a game he threw the ball at the beginning of last year and didn't go too well.
Here's my only concern with Winston. Take care of the ball better. Take care of your body better. That's all. Take care of the ball better and take care of your body. Don't be so reckless. The third and two dive in October in the third quarter with 6 minutes to go isn't necessary. In December with 5 minutes to go, when you're making that division push, yeah, I get it. It's the same as Aaron Rodgers does the same thing. You know, kind of know the situation. But those are my only two things with Winston, and I'm sure, look, he knows it, and Dirk reminds them. But if you don't take care of your body and you don't take care of the football, it's not going
to
work.
Is it too quick to name him the face of the franchise, Justin?
Absolutely not. He is the face of the franchise.
Him in terms of leadership or no?
Who else would be the face of the franchise?
I mean, and I think while he is the third youngest starting quarterback in the NFL, he has shown a maturity that I don't think many people thought he had when he was at Florida State stealing the crab legs or whatever, or saying whatever he was saying. I mean, he's matured so much in such a short period of time, and what he's done for charities in this community, what he's done as a leader on this team.
I think he's won people over.
Absolutely.
He seems to be leading a very quiet life away from the facility at that home in Odessa. Very quiet.
And what a great place for him to be. Odessa. There's nothing going on in Odessa.
A couple of sheep wandering around.
Well, that is where I'm hosting my next golf tournament. At the Eagles, October 22nd.
It's very quiet out there, which is great for golf.
Sunday. Oh, it is. There's some very nice golf communities out there.
The one thing you can never get around is the guy's ass is in the parking lot at 6 in the morning. Every freaking day. You got to respect that, Todd. He's putting the work in.
Does he have his own key? Do they still have keys anymore?
I believe he
does
have his own key.
And
Cutter
here's
can't
the thing.
Beat him in.
He's not doing it just to show that he – I think he's doing it because he's genuine and wants to be the absolute best, and he knows he's got to put in that work. You know, I think there are some quarterbacks that would just, you know, hey, look at me. I'm the first one in, last one out. That's not the feeling, not the vibe I get from Jameis Winston.
Todd, any qualms that the Bucs might buy into their hype a little bit?
Yeah, I'm a little worried about that.
Justin, last year – big win in Atlanta. They go to Arizona. We find out later that a couple of guys said, we weren't ready to play because of the big win. Come on, after 1 week, it's a young team. Mm-hmm.
I drove down from Vegas to go to that game in Arizona. I'm like, what am I seeing here?
This is after a huge win.
Yeah. Old coaching phrase, right? You can't get too high off your wins. You can't get too low off your losses. I'm a little worried about the low off the losses more than the high off the wins. I'm not worried if they get off to the 2-1 start or somehow get past New England, still have a winning record. I think that's a good thing. I worry if things go wrong early. Finger pointing, here's the issue. Jameis starts to try to do too much. I'm more worried about the other side of
this. DeSean Jackson, give me the ball. What's going on? Well, if they're losing.
Well, Jackson, how do you guys feel about this? Because obviously, as someone who plays as much fantasy and a longtime fan of the NFC East, here's DeSean Jackson's 16 games to me. He will outright win you one game. One game, he will outright win you that
game. A
game
that you would not have won.
Right.
That's right.
Then there'll be another game where at the end of the game, you'll be like, DeSean Jackson might be the player of the game. He didn't win it outright for you, but he had a big role. Then there's going to be
14 games.
There's going to be another 2 to 3 games with some very solid numbers. There's going to be about 4 games where you get nothing. Whether he has a soft tissue injury, he's dressed, he's not dressed, he doesn't catch the ball, he doesn't get targets. How does he handle that? And the other half of the season, I have no idea. But such is kind of that diva world of wide receivers. Odell Beckham Jr. is a lot that way, too. So when Odell Beckham Jr. says before the Brown hit him low, you know, I should be the highest paid player. Why? Why should you? What have the Giants won since you became a member of the New York Giants? I'm sorry, before you got there, Eli and Coughlin were the guys who took down the Patriots head-to-head twice, 4 years apart. Odell, you weren't a part of that. Why are you the highest-paid player? But that's wide receivers. That's Terrell Owens. That's others.
I don't see the diva gene necessarily in Mr. Mike Evans. Justin, am I wrong?
No, I mean, we haven't seen it yet. And I hope somebody like DeSean Jackson doesn't rub off on him. I don't think he will. Now, here's the thing about Mike Evans is maybe we saw a little bit of it early in his career. And I know, what is he going into his fourth year? So maybe it was after his second year. Remember in that Carolina game, he just seemed very immature at the end of the season. He was always looking for a penalty flag. He was picking fights in that Carolina game. And then all of a sudden,
and he was dropping a lot of balls.
And he was dropping a lot of, and then we went through that off season. I think that was the off season he got married.
Is the drop thing done with him?
Yeah,
is it done?
Yes, I think it's basically done.
I mean, he really turned it around last season, and I think he got married that off season. I think he matured big time that entire off season. I think somebody got in his ear and said, I don't know what you were doing that, because it wasn't just that last game; it was that entire season.
His numbers weren't bad, but he had a bad year.
But he was always that looking for the penalty. Yeah. He would, rather than going up and getting the ball, he was always, before the ball would even get to him, he was throwing the flag like, hey, where's the penalty flag? Go up and get the ball. Let the referees call the game. He matured. He came on, had a great year last year. And hopefully that offseason, whatever happened that offseason, carries on the rest of his career. Because if he acts that way, he's going to be one of the best receivers in the NFL for a long time.
Jackson will catch enough passes to make teams think twice about double and triple team and Evans. I think that's important for the Bucs to establish Jackson.
Oh, he fills a specific role.
Get a little coverage away from Evans, because I think Evans is basically uncoverable by one guy.
Well, there's even if he's covered, he's not covered, and that's what Dirk covered. That's what Dirk Cutter says is give him a chance. Jameis, give him a chance. Hey, before we wrap up our threesome here, and this is probably the best threesome I could ever be a part of. I just want to let you guys know that. I'm really, really
I just want to add that in my team scrambles, if I put a team out as a threesome, one player gets a second shot on a fourth ball. I like playing golf as a threesome, so we should do this again.
Yes, I would love to.
I would do it on the golf course, but I hear Ira kills wildlife out there. I've heard that story about you from a number of years ago.
I got a sand crane in the throat off the tee at
River
Tampa
Hills.
Bay Golf and Country Club.
I thought it was at River Hills.
And my reaction to it, somebody said, Kaufman, how can you do that? And I said, it cost me 50 yards off the tee box.
Yes.
That's how sympathetic I am to wildlife, young man.
It's one of my favorite stories about other people playing golf where I wasn't. The other is Nigel, the only original employee of the Lightning, on like 8 at Feather Sound on a par 3, dunked a tee shot in the water, teed up another one, put it in the hole for a par. Just like a Freddie Couples at 17 at Sawgrass. That story courtesy of our friend Rick Peckham.
It's been a lot of fun, Commissioner.
It has been. All right, so you guys asked me what I think. Todd, what do you think? Bucks this season.
I'm worried about win regression, and I'm worried about how this the start through the Patriots game and how the team reacts to it if things don't go their way. I'm worried about
Hard Knocks concerned or not concerned?
Non-factor.
Nah, I think so, too.
Ira?
I think Hard Knocks put the Bucks in a good light. Innocuous, rather innocuous. I'm with you here, Commissioner. The only time I'll ever agree with you, except on the golf course. 10 wins, the natural progression, Commissioner. 10 wins, tough schedule, but they got enough talent to win 10. If they don't, somebody's going to take a fall.
Thank you for both coming out to my fantasy draft tonight.
This was fantastic.
And we got another one coming up.
Next Monday night.
That's Monday, Labor Day.
Yep.
That's going to be in St. Pete at the Hooters on 4th Street. Yep. I'm going to be there. You're going to be hosting it. It's going to be a blast.
I still have spots for other owners. They can email me at toddwrightfantasyfootball@gmail.com.
You know, I thought that Ira calling me Jason was probably the worst thing anyone could call me on a podcast, but then I heard that Chris Myers called me Justin Polinsky, and I just was like, so one day we're going to put it all together, and it's going to be Jason Polinsky. And
Myers
it's
took
be phenomenal.
Me off the hook, Todd.
He
I'm
really
off the
did.
Hook, baby.
He really did. Great time with you guys.
Enjoyed
Ira,
it.
Todd, thank you.
Thank you.
So, Lee, how about that? That was a lot of fun. But what we saw, what we got out of the great sage of Tampa Bay sports is that he sees a 10-win Buccaneers team for 2017. The cat is out of the bag, Ira. The knish is out of the foil. So, 10 wins. What are you thinking? Dive a little deeper here, Ira.
Lee, very simple. Stop going 1-3 in September. Stop it. Stop it now. Stop digging that kind of hole. Even a 5-game winning streak couldn't get you in the playoffs last year. Couldn't do it. 6-2 second half of the season. Not good enough to get you in. Because you dug an early hole. 1-3, 3-5. It's too deep. You're not that talented. You're talented, but you're not, you know, the New England Patriots yet. So, Lee, the natural progression, 9-7, win one more game, you know, battle for the division title. New Orleans is, you know, they go 8-8 every year, and the defense still stinks.
Mm-hmm.
Carolina, a million question marks. Nobody knows what's going on with Cam Newton. Nobody knows what's going on with Luke Kuechly. He's a concussion away from retirement.
Very, very, very good point about Kuechly.
Russell Shepard.
Russell Shepard. Now, come on. you know, Atlanta, they're 0-3 in the preseason. Means nothing.
They
still have a potent offense.
Very true, but they have a new offensive coordinator, so that could throw a wrench into things.
They do, and the guy's never been a coordinator, and Shanahan did a fantastic job last year. He was tremendous. So, fight for the division. 10-6. Lee, is that out of kilter? I got Buck fans thinking they're going to win 12 games. I got them 10-6.
It's not out of the realm of possibility.
Todd Wright thinks they might regress. He might regress.
Well, a lot of it's going to have to do with the running game. I really believe that. I'm not saying the Bucks are not built to run the ball, but they need a running game. Right now they don't have a running game. Not one that keeps defense coordinators up at night. Let's put it that way. I mean, I'm still very much buyer beware mode about Doug Martin. I very much so. So I can see both ways. I could see them going 10-7. you might be able to see them going 11-6, or 11-5, I should say. 10-6 would be the right math.
Could this be a top 12 defense, late top 12, or is that pushing it?
Well, they sure looked good second half of last season. Of course, you know, that was two different I wrote this over the weekend on JoeBucksFan.com. The defense was BB and AB. BB is before bye, AB is after bye. Two completely different defenses. If they play like they did the second half of the season, and I hate to bring this up because it's a pet peeve of mine, that damn lack of an edge rush, if somehow Noah Spence finds a way to get 9 sacks, you know, I think they'll be in business.
Steve, Noah Spence, there's no getting around it. He's a critical piece to this whole puzzle.
Maybe. Depends how much they can score and how potent the offense is. You know, things change a lot. But, yeah, they got to get that edge rush somewhere. But I'm not letting you off the hook. I refuse to let you off the hook, Ira. Natural progression. What is this, like the science class or something like that? Why is this team better than it was last year? Why is it a 10-win team with a brutal schedule?
Because they had a heck of an offseason. That's why. Weapons for Winston, mission accomplished. Vernon Hargraves, big leap forward. I think everybody sees it. It's obvious.
Do you see a big leap or just a leap?
I see a big leap for Vernon Hargraves. The way he's playing, he's going to be around the football.
Yeah, I think he's going to be okay.
No reason to think Grimes is going back. This is a better team. Folk over Aguayo.
Oh,
that might
win
you a game next year. You know,
in Green Bay, now we're up to 11.
No. I got him at 10-6, Steve. I'm not cutting them any slack. No excuses, barring an injury to Winston. I don't want to hear about it. Win 10 games and match the expectations of your fan base, which is a growing fan base. Don't let them down.
All right,
you got them at 6-10 over there, Rizbitz. You got him at 6-10.
No, don't give me this crap, Ira. Don't spread rumors. I actually, on my podcast on Monday, 10-6.
You just don't want me to agree with you. That's what
I wanted to hear why. But I believe that they're going another step. So there's no reason not to.
There's no reason not to.
Better defense, better head coach, and they got some more weapons. And Jameis should be a little bit better. Should be enough.
Can the running game be any worse, Lee, than it was last year? Can't be worse.
Yeah.
Worse than last year? Could it be worse than last year?
I don't expect it to be worse, but it could be.
I don't think so. I just think that that whole weapons for Winston thing also opens up the box.
That's a great
point. I mean,
that's just
common
last
reality.
Year you crowd in the box, and you pay attention to Mike Evans.
I do think, I know it came up with Todd and Justin, I do think that there's a very good likelihood that they do go get a running back on the waiver wire, because the bottom line is you have to assume Doug Martin is not available. Because you're only playing the first 3 weeks of the first 3 weeks, and if somebody is nicked up or they really don't get a good feeling out of McNichols, who I don't believe they'll cut whatsoever.
You don't think they'll cut him?
No.
Okay.
I think it's a huge overreaction, and I think it's more Dirk Cutter playing those mind games we've talked about.
Getting the playbook.
Lighting a fire under the guy, making him a little scared, see how he responds. I mean, Cutter, as Lee wrote on JoeBucksFan.com, Cutter said he can play special teams. He's doing a good job. Well, you know what? He was going to be the third or fourth string running back anyway. Special teams is his primary gig. And they like Peyton Barber. You know, and they liked him a lot last year. And they were willing to bring him along. So why wouldn't they bring along a fifth-round pick who has better hands than Peyton Barber and is playing special teams? So I don't think he's going to get dumped. But if the Bucs see somebody out there who can run the football,
I agree with you.
Maybe they take a flyer early. I don't know.
You know, don't sell Jacquizz Rodgers short. And I don't mean that as a pun, Lee. Because I'm going to remind you guys.
I was waiting for that pun.
He kind of saved the Bucs season last year.
He did.
It's easy to forget that.
Against
but
Carolina,
they went into Charlotte on that Monday night. They were reeling, Steve. They were 1-3. And what does Dirk Cutter do? He gives the guy the ball 10 times in the first quarter. And gets a little bit of, sanity. Instead of Winston throwing 48 times, you know, this guy is established, setting a physical tone, Lee. And they end up winning that game. And Rodgers is a big part of that win.
Big part of that win.
All right, Kaufman, it has been beautiful to see you. Thursday, we've got a rollicking podcast coming up.
That's right.
As we tick closer toward the season.
I'm even going to Thursday night's game, Isbits. I'm going. If you know the Bucks are playing, I'm going.
I'm actually showing up as well. This might be my first game four preseason in years.
By the way, Bananas Foster might be gone. It might be gone.
It's all about the press box, dude.
Am I wrong?
Well, also what might be gone, and this is my right up my alley, they didn't have any chicken tenders after the game. They had sandwiches, but no chicken tenders.
Listen to the whiny sports writers who don't have to pay for their meals. Can you imagine?
It's a new day in Tampa Bay, Ira. iTunes, find your podcast there. Podbean, Google Play. You can subscribe everywhere. Get a nice alert.
How am I doing? Showing up on the ratings board? A little bit.
You're actually doing extremely well, Ira. Extremely well. And also, keep the comments coming in. There's some great ones. On Thursday, we'll read some classic comments coming up.
And a shout-out to Chris Myers for mentioning the stick carriers, but getting Justin Pulaski's name wrong.
Yes, he called him, we talked about that, Jason Polinski.
And look who's talking, Jason.
Jason Polinski. And, you know, that's two games in a row, Chris Myers calling out Joe Bucks.
Are we going to see...
How about that?
Are we going to see Cutter with the stick carriers on Hard Knocks before we're done with Hard Knocks?
I don't know. But, you know, on Thursday we'll talk all about this coming up.
About Hard Knocks.
Tonight's Hard Knocks episode. It's been fun, Ira. Great to have some special guests. We had to work less, which was great.
And how about the great staff here at Hooters? They're outstanding. Brooke, outstanding.
Yeah, Brooke? Outstanding. We'll call Brooke over. You can give her a group hug. Get out of here, Ira.